You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
My name is John Tamihere. Introducing myself, I'm one of 12 children, born in working class West Auckland. Māori father, Pākehā mother. I've got 6 kids and I've got 8 grandkids. We're Catholic. That might be a bit of a tilt in the reasons as to why we're so productive in that regard. I was the first out of my hood to come to Auckland University, first to get a double degree in law out of here. And I haven't been back in this studio for 35 years, and that's just tells you how far down the track the can's been kicked. Yeah.
So you're obviously standing for mayoralty, and that's to do with shaping a future Auckland. We're going to start off right at the end.
Sure.
And I'd like to ask, where do you see Auckland being when you're gone?
Well, one of the reasons we all politicians will tell you why they're standing is to make the difference and ensure that you leave a better Auckland than the one you found. So we all aspire to that. When I go, I just want my grandchildren to say when they visit my my grave, as I do with my own grandparents, great-grandparents, and so on, to just say, hey, look, my granddad did a great job, and he left a far better Auckland, and we're far the better for it, his work in shaping the city that we see. What might that look like is the next question. Well, it's a tale of two cities at the moment, left versus right, poor versus rich, and sometimes brown versus white. And so you need someone to unite that and not allow it to be a continuing tale of two cities. That's about the socialization process within our city, which is now not metropolitan but cosmopolitan. It's not bicultural anymore, it's multicultural. And so we must embrace all of the energies of the new peoples that are coming to Auckland in that regard. So that's on the social side of it. On the economic side, we've all got a right to a fair go in this country. And the failed neoliberal economic experiment is failed. You know, it's an emperor with no clothes on. And so we have to change the whole narrative. And Auckland can lead the nation in the change of that narrative, where it's no longer left and right. That debate fell over last century with the Berlin Wall. And Aucklanders are that dynamic that we can now shape the national narrative on changing the economic settings, right down to fixing social housing and housing, where our grandparents and great-grandparents after the Second World War built 100,000 houses without power tools, and not one of those houses leaks. And so we've got to understand that the state now must re-enter the market because the market has failed.
You've just mentioned a few ways there, but how do you see Auckland getting to that point where it's no longer two cities, essentially?
Well, there are multiple steps, okay? So it would be, you know, I'd be bullshitting you if I just did it in broad strokes. I don't have the time, nor do you, to go through the policy settings, but I'm the only mayoral candidate in the super city that's produced a whole policy settings. I'd invite you to go to my website, jtformayor.co.nz, and have a look at all my Facebook, where there's a lot of conversation, I think, good. So I'll park up the particularity of that and the specifics of that for people to review in their own time. The big issue that you've raised, which is, I go back to Rogernomics, and Mr. Gough was part of that. It has now failed and been mined out. So what we've got to do is 93% of all taxes go to Wellington to be redistributed. Aucklanders have paid for the rebuild of Christchurch, the repairs of Kaikoura and the rebuild there, the repairs in Wellington, $3 billion provincial growth fund. We're not allowed to put our hands up for 1 cent. We must now start to seize on a new rights system on the deployment of Auckland's taxes on Auckland's infrastructure and on Auckland's difficulties. We've been a very tolerant group of people, but we're one third of the total population of the country. We are the premier commercial and economic and social city in the country. And we just have to start to stand up and love it, like Londoners love London and like New Yorkers love New York. The status quo is a failing status quo. We become numbed by things and you start to normalize the abnormal. I don't accept another human laying in a gutter downtown. I just don't accept that in my city or my country. We're a welfare state born out of the great leadership of Michael Joseph Savage and the implementation of it, where every baby has an equality of opportunity to health, welfare, education, justice, and housing. And we've let ourselves down deeply, and we're not LA, we're not San Francisco, and we're not Mumbai. And we cannot tolerate that just as one ugly little example of what's gone wrong.
You mentioned all your policy settings, and luckily I've had time to go through them. I'm going to start with some other things that you said unacceptable before. Perhaps we could kind of consider unacceptable, and we'll start with transport because it's a huge talking point, obviously. Can I get you to briefly explain each of the different subcategories in your transport policy?
Well, let's take it from the top. 3.8% of the roading network in Auckland are roads driven by New Zealand Transport Agency out of Wellington. In other cities, that doesn't much matter because the main motorways that bypass or intersect through. In Auckland, those 3.8% of roads are another crossing to the shore. They are to finish Penlink. They are to finish Mill Road. These are huge projects causing massive congestion and bottlenecks. Okay, so we just have to finish our network. Why we have to finish it and upload government money from central government coffers into it is because Aucklanders are maxed out. So you've got to understand what the problem is before you can fix it and then deploy solutions. So we're 265% maxed out on our balance sheet. We're too big not to have these projects finished, but we're too small to gouge out the present ratepayer base. So that's why you have to front-end load it from central government.
That's a common theme throughout a lot of your policies and a lot of things you've brought up is getting central government to pay for these things. How do we do that?
Well, you go back to what happened when they left the field. Now, under Rogernomics, and Phil Goff was a member of the cabinet, they withdrew from infrastructural funding when they did away with the Ministry of Public Works and a whole range of other things. So they shifted the burden from central government on infrastructure onto the ratepayer because the market said its user pays. Right now, we were all mesmerized by that, and that's good and that's cool. But 35 years down the track, you start to look at that policy now, and we've mined the best of it out, and we're now in this toxic little sand pit, just moving the sand around. Now, that's not going to fix it. So we have to bring central government back into play, and we have to bring them back into play quite dramatically. That means sharing power, and sharing power often means sharing money.
Indeed. So you've touched on very, very briefly on roads. Another thing you've brought up is, or in conversation in the documents, is the fuel tax and the removal of the fuel tax. Again, something that was implemented not by Phil Goff, but by central government.
Look, it was implemented by a Labor government, not a national government. It was signed off by Phil Goff and brought back into Auckland. The 11.5, when you strike a petrol tax to the order of 11.5 cents a litre, that is the most egregious, regressive tax regime you can apply on people earning under $60,000 a year in this city. It impacts on them dramatically and adversely. They've got nowhere to run and hide. The top end of town can salve it off on business tax, on all the rest of it. So straight away, it is one of the most punitive taxes regimes that you can bring into play. If Auckland was not alone in that, and every other city was treated equally in New Zealand, well then Aucklanders will cop it. Why should we be discriminated for solely because we live in Auckland and solely because the present leadership in Auckland won't stand up for us in regard to a national debate where we are treated as second-class citizens. Why is it that Auckland is the only one that has to suffer this tax? So you need a champion that goes to Wellington rather than a puppet to the present administration. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether it was a Bill English or John Key. This conversation is across both parties. It's neither left nor right.
You said that it was signed off by Phil Goff in reference to his previous affiliations to the Labour government. He is, of course, an independent MP, well, independent mayor.
No, he's not. No, he's not. He's every time he's run for mayor, he has sought and won the ruling council of the Labour Party's endorsement. It's to suggest that he is an independent is just not true. Why did he turn it all down? Did he say to the Labour ruling council of the Labour Party, turn it down? He launched the Labour Party local government election campaign in South Auckland. Why would an independent not do that for CNR? An independent is an independent. This guy is donkey deep with the Labour Party. I don't have a problem with that, but have the courage and the honesty to stand for it. Put your name up and say, I'm the Labour Party mayoral candidate. Don't say you're an independent because that's just not true.
You would classify yourself as an independent despite your previous affiliations with the Labour government as well?
Well, I'm the only member of the Labour Party that got thrown out for having the audacity to have an aspiration to stand for higher office. I was thrown out without any natural justice. I was thrown out solely because they said, I should go to the back of the bus and Gough can be the driver at the front of it. Now, that is not one fair. It's not a natural justice. And my father made me a member of the Labour Party when I was 8 years old with my eight brothers and three sisters. And we were members of the Labourers' Union because we're steel fixers and construction workers. So I have a huge pedigree with this outfit, right? I'm grateful now that I'm liberated.
Going back, you said he signed this under the Labour government at central level.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't have signed it, I take it?
No. My whole history is about upholding the rights of vulnerable communities. Have a look at it. So whether it's building, I could have gone downtown here and been like some other colleagues at law school, but very wealthy and not look back at my obligations and duties to my poor side of the street. My wife and I made a clear decision to build social enterprises as opposed to my own balance sheet. And we've done that. We're building 120 social houses out here in Waterview and Great North Road right now for delivery this year. We will not build affordable houses because our people can't price point $650,000 a price point for a new property. So the fact of the matter is if you ever brought in a tax, the last thing you'd do as a Labour person is to bring that regressive, dirty little tax in.
So how does one find a balance between environmental protection and social protection with the similar tax? Is it the way that the tax is set at the rate that it's set to affect certain brackets? Or is it just in general, in your opinion, a bad idea?
No. Let's not mix your metaphors up here, because the reality is that petrol tax is being used solely to build infrastructure. Okay, it's not being used to attack environmental issues. Even if we spent the $28 billion of the ATAP money that's been voted over the next 10 years, even if we spent that, AA's reports show that only 10% at best Aucklanders will be on public transport even after we've spent that. The notion that we're going to get rid of motor vehicles over the next 25 to 30 years and have a public transport system that works extraordinarily well for people having to cross town all over the place, particularly mothers with kids, that's just not going to happen. What will happen is we will segue to more electric vehicles and hydrogen vehicles, which I think is an outstanding transition. But you won't get away from personalised vehicle movements on scale over the next 25 to 30 years. It's just not going to happen.
There are, of course, issues that run with the personalised electrical vehicles, but that's a whole nother wormhole. Indeed. So you're talking about public transport networks. You've been quoted recently in the lead up to this election discussing the idea of mothballing or putting on a shelf the city rail link.
Yeah, that's right. That's up Dominion Road, Mount Eden.
Yeah. So why, and Why is this?
Well, because it's not rapid rail, it's slow rail.
Right.
Yeah. And so let's not over sell this thing. It's a fact. Secondly, the dislocation to those communities running all the way up there is just unacceptable. Thirdly, there are alternatives. And right now we've got 95% of our network rail is already in place with heavy rail. So the track capacity and the ability to go either above the present heavy rail with alternatives and options or using a mixture of both is already in place. And I would prefer that if we've already laid off all of the network, the rail network, that we look at opportunities there. Here's the other interesting thing. How would we fund that? The New Zealand Super Fund have been to my office to say they can't get any solution through the present mayor's office. They've got between $8 and $14 billion worth of New Zealand Super money that's offshore, investing in other people's infrastructure. I want to bring that onshore, and I want to fire up both heavy rail and other options, but it has to be express rail, surely. You just can't have a slow tram or rail system up Dominion Road at Mount Eden. There are alternatives, right, is what I'm saying to you.
Yeah, certainly. So to kind of clarify for those listening, you're not suggesting that we put on the shelf the work that's currently being done in the CBD to do with the city rail link?
No.
Solely its expansion into Mount Eden.
Yes, from Mount Eden on. Where do you go from Mount Eden on? Okay, so look, here's the problem. It's already bespoken. It's already voted on. We've blown the budget out by $1 billion there, as you know, in April. And it looks like there's another $600 million on top of that. Now, you just can't continue to print money of that order and keep going down Dominion Road.
Other candidates have suggested the idea of municipal bonds, and something that happens in multiple other cities worldwide. Does that sit well with your kind of stance in other policy settings that you've launched around kind of highlighting and putting the spotlight on New Zealand business? Or can you see this as something that is resolvable and is a valid solution?
There are multiple solutions that haven't been brought into play by the present leadership. One of them are municipal bonds. Another is private-public partnerships. Another is bringing our superannuation funds back offshore, onshore. Another one is congestion charging. And I've already announced that with the port, and the port must move to the twilight hours of work. And that then takes your supply side of your economy, and that's trucks, vans, distribution, warehousing. They work. You see, we can't outbuild what we're doing, but we've got to turn Auckland into a 24/7 city. To do that, you've got to congestion charge trucks out of the city and vans and so on. If you can't get a voluntary agreement. I've indicated to the Transport Forum, and they agree that in the first 12 months of my mayoralty, they will look at a voluntary transition. If not, it just has to be regulated, and part of the regulation is congestion pricing. So I've answered your question in terms of saying, no, there are multiple tools to be deployed here rather than gouging out the ratepayer, which drives affordability in the city through the roof. This is one of the most unaffordable cities to live in the world. I mean, how did it come to this?
It's a good question. You mentioned that under this leadership, these transport options haven't been explored. Do you think it's unfair to highlight this leadership due to kind of our transport failures going back into the 50s?
No, because the present leader has been in cabinets for 15 years of some of the largest changes that have created some of the biggest problems that we're facing now. So when you've been a politician for 32 years in Wellington, and then you've been a mayor for 3 years in Auckland, the nexus between the two is significant. You can't unbundle that. You can't practice some form of selective amnesia about that.
So are you suggesting, due to the effectiveness of the changes he's brought up at a central government level in the past, he should, in theory, because of his good track record, be able to implement similar positive change at a local level?
Well, I don't know what his good track record is. Name one.
Well, you're suggesting...
No, hang on. 32 years of him being down there in Wellington, name, off the top of your head, one that's got him written all over it.
I wasn't the one that brought up that he had kind of brought through changes or significant changes in government. You were the one that brought up that he had made significant changes when his time.
If you go back on your tape, and I don't want to get too antsy on this, but you back on the tape, you'll say he's had a good.
In my question, because your answer implied. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Right. Are you saying, I'll reframe the question for you. Are you saying that because he has overseen changes at a central level in the past, whether they're good or not is neither here nor there, he should be expected to instantly, at a different system, bring in that ability to oversee and create change?
Well, I'll give you an example. In 32 years in Wellington, at no time did he say that Auckland should get access to our GST returns, particularly rates on rates with GST. He only woke up to that 4 weeks ago and made that announcement, right? No. What we've got to be very careful about, as usual, is pretending that when you leave 32 years of public service in regard to being fully paid as a member of parliament with major obligations, duties and responsibilities, that the day you take up the mayoralty, that history doesn't exist. There is a continuity here, okay? And that continuity is own up that your neoliberal politics and economics have failed and let's fix it up. And unless you do that, we get incrementalism. And so the present government's talking a big game, but it's rhetoric at the moment. They're going to have to enter the market because the market has failed.
So continuing on with some ideas in transport policy still.
Sure.
Just because it's incredibly in-depth and it's an interesting read. You've talked about all these kind of express or light tram train networks throughout the CBD. Would this kind of be similar to the trolley car networks, but a modernised version?
Yeah, you've seen my policy, and I do invite you to go to jtformayor.co.nz to have a look at the alternative options in regard to what we'd historically call rail. Okay, and so we've got now vehicles that can travel on the road as well as on rail in terms of a hybrid. These are deployed widely. We can go under, over, or on present networks without the major dislocation that taking from Mount Eden North going Dominion Road, Mount Eden Road would have. And I'm just putting ideas on the table. Look, I haven't been incumbent. I don't have my whole campaign has run from outstanding volunteers. From engineering school here at Auckland all the way through to our volunteers on the streets in Western South Auckland.
So would you suggest, or why would you suggest that this hasn't been done already? Is it a leadership or is it just a feasibility? Yeah. Is it a?
No, it's all of the above. The biggest problem we had was under neoliberal economics, you only invest in infrastructure when the economy's on cycle. What we've got wrong in this country over the last 30 years is that we have to fund when the economy is off cycle. And what that means is that there has to be a national consensus across political parties that so invested and needed is continuity and infrastructure for all populations up and down the country, that you must fund infrastructure and keep capacity and capability humming at a certain level. What that does, it stimulates economies in the up cycle as well as in the down cycle. That, in a nutshell, is our major problem. And then everything flows from there. So all I'm saying to you is the beauty about Auckland is Auckland's the gem in the crown where you say, hey, look, the emperor's got no clothes. This thing's failed and we have to change it.
You seem to have, unjustly so, quite the objection to the failings of neoliberalism in New Zealand and Auckland, as many people do and perhaps should. So why then stand for mayor rather than trying to fix how this has affected us on a central government level?
I did try on a central government level. My running partner, Christine Fletcher, tried. When you get to Wellington, all of a sudden you're taken over by a so-called national interest. And then what you're taken over by is what happened to the Bulger government and what happened to the Longy government. And that is, as soon as you stand for a major shift, you often get turfed out. So straight after the Bulger government, every other government has been incrementalist and grey. See, the politics of grey don't get you anywhere. What it is that you throw a bit of money here and a bit of that there. You run the wagons around. But ultimately, there's no change in substance. And unless you change the substance of what you're doing, you won't get change. Okay, all you'll get is beautiful rhetoric.
I don't necessarily disagree. With that, you brought up national interest. And so when you go into central government, you have to consider national interest.
That's right.
And that may cause some problem in the way policy gets implemented across the country. What stops that from happening at an Auckland level?
Oh, the beauty about Auckland's position right now is the leverage it has as a super city. It is 40% of our GDP. In the next 20 years, Hamilton will be South Auckland, no doubt. The port of Tauranga will be our southern port. North Port in Whangarei will be our northern port. The port that we know down the bottom of town on 77 hectares of our most prime land will no longer be there. And we must think in these time frames going forward rather than 3-year cycles. 3-year cycles are killing us. So once we start to think about the power Auckland has to change the national narrative, you don't surrender it.
So with national interest, obviously you have to consider multiple different cities, and that can slow down processes or get policies removed from the table quite soon on due to how they affect that. With Auckland, say we look at it as a small country, as you have just brought up, essentially, and you have different vested interests across Auckland. So what I want in the Waitemata district is going to be very different to what someone wants out in Waitakere. And that's pretty well documented. How do we overcome that and look at creating a cohesive step forward?
Yes, because we've never had leadership that wants to unite Auckland as Aucklanders, rather than having tribal warlords in West Auckland, East Auckland, South Auckland, and Central Auckland. So when we bought into amalgamation of the 7 unitary authorities, we haven't got the efficiencies out of it. But two, we really haven't looked at a Auckland at large leadership. The only at large leadership is the mayor. And so the mayor driving a very strong policy platform to be elected gives significant leadership entitlements and rights if the mandate of Aucklanders is won. And don't be surprised that national government will listen. The present Prime Minister is the member for Mount Albert. The present Minister of Transport is my member out in Chatutu. The present Minister of Welfare is Carmel Cipollone. She's my member in Kelston. And it goes on and on. You cannot form a government in this country without Auckland. You cannot have a cabinet without Auckland. But equally, you cannot jump on a plane at Mangere Airport and pretend you no longer have obligations and duties and responsibilities back to Auckland.
Fair. There's a whole heap more in the transport policy, such as the bridge, and getting over, I'm trying to work a sensible way around that, as well as some kind of redevelopments of a kind of east-west link that goes through what us Central Aucklanders would call South Auckland. But I think we perhaps move on. As you've said before, it's all available on the website.
Yep.
It's interesting reading, if that's your kind of thing. One of the other big talking points of your campaign has been rates and freezing rates.
Correct.
What does it mean to freeze rates?
It means, on dollar terms, $86.6 million a year, okay, to freeze. It means that I find 1% savings across the whole of the city's balance sheet. Every business person listening to this will understand that 1% savings is easily achieved. I am told, and I have no need to doubt his word at this stage, that Mr. Gough says he can save and is saving $100 million a year. So on that basis, a 1% savings at 86.6 is a done deal. Why would you assert a rating freeze? A rating freeze is extraordinarily important because I believe that the city is being inefficiently driven. And as a consequence, you have to draw a line in the sand and then take take that to your bureaucrats, who I say are out of control because there's not enough fiscal rigour in the city. And I've had a guts full of rates going up because we've got a whole lot of elders on fixed incomes who are stressed now, and I want them to have a cup of tea. And I want us to have a break, and I want us to reset and refresh our city with a new conversation about whether the 21 boards are the right way in which ratepayers can have a proper say, or whether the whole legislative framework that we've got is right, and reclaiming control of the CCOs completely. So there's a lot of work to be done in the next 3 years. What I've also said, And others would not have the courage to ask for it, if I'm bringing a rate freeze into town, I want landlords to have a look at freezing rents, because I'm passing on good value to them for 3 years, and why don't we all muck in together for this? I don't have a regulatory right to assert that, but I do have a right relevant to ethics to ask for it.
Certainly. You brought up a whole heap of things just then, and granted, we have time. I'd like to continue and dive into them a bit.
Sure.
So you first said whether the 21 boards is an appropriate structure for the people of Auckland to have their voices heard.
Yeah.
Would you suggest another structure, or is this just an idea that you think is important to perhaps look into?
Well, the point of reference is to go back to the Royal Commission of Inquiry on Auckland and Auckland Amalgamation and the Super City. I think there were some outstanding feedback that was achieved there, where we go to a mixture of local the governing board councillors elected at large, as much as a mixture of those elected to cover off geographic areas in the city. I think that's a good mix. But it's not for me to say that at this stage. It's for me over the next 3 years to run that consultative process properly and not be predetermined about it. In the city at the moment, you name it, and whatever council-controlled organisation is running a consultation process, there is predetermination regardless. And that's on the record, and I'll leave that at that.
So you also brought up the goodwill of landlords, something a lot of people have been trying to find for quite some time. As you said, you can't really enforce it. I mean, some cities like Berlin have implemented landlord rent caps.
Yeah.
You haven't kind of said that you would kind of die on that hill, essentially. But how do you think you can ask landlords to get there? Drop their rents?
Well, as I've said, I'm passing on a public good benefit to them. And I would like to think in Auckland, New Zealand, that there is enough moral fibre amongst them to agree that they should pass on that by just giving people a breather. Okay, for goodness sakes. We've got the lowest, I'll tell you why, we've got the lowest interest rate in terms of their borrowings. So let's put all this together. This government should have put capital gains tax on. No capital gains tax, right? These guys they're like picking shit, really, and so I need leaders in this country to start to stand up and call it out, right? So we've done that. Will the ethics and their fibre bear in? I don't know that until a year or two down the track. Then that gives you enough a political conversation to have a look at the possibility of a Berlin-type regulation, right? But you've got to build the narrative for it, and you've got to start the conversation for it, and that's what leadership is.
Certainly. So how plausible do you think a rates freeze is? A lot of people have said it's not something that could be or can it be on the cards.
Well, I've just told you it's fiscally and imminently doable. All you need is the guts and the courage to strike it, right? So I know that the dollars are there. So those that say they can't, I can't do it, here's what I offer to them. Give me your name and address. The day I'm elected, I'll put your rates up to what Gough City do. You pay into the city because you're good people and you want to subsidise the rest of us. So to all those that say that a rate strike can't occur, when it does, pay what you said I couldn't do. And that's my challenge to them. So give me your names and addresses, and I will send you a golf bill after the election when I'm elected. I guarantee you not one of them will put their name down. Not one.
It's an interesting challenge. And an interesting, well, it would lead to a very interesting proposition of perhaps subsidized rates and taxes, which is a massive conversation as well, along with rent caps.
Well, it's a separate conversation altogether. Yeah. I've taken a very overt rate free strike. There are lots of other tools in the toolbox in regard to bringing rate relief, which I don't intend to get into today because I have to win this one on the big ticket items.
Fair enough. Do you think that it is the tact to go with winning it on the big ticket items rather than the more, perhaps not as shiny, but okay, here's something that everyone understands will work and can work, rather than the, I hate the term, but pie in the sky option?
Yeah, if you believe that this city doesn't need change, and if you believe the present failing status quo is great, and if you believe that everything's hunky-dory in this city, well, good on you. I don't. And the only way to bring change is to make change. And to make change, you have to declare what that change will be. So you've got to have the backbone and the courage to do that. We've had opaque, grey incrementalism for 25 years. And where's that landed us? Human flotsam in the gutters downtown. That is the tip of the iceberg, and it's unacceptable.
So no under-promise, over-deliver for you then?
Oh, no, I'll deliver the rates freeze, absolutely, 100%, no doubt. I will ensure that the slow rail up Dominion Road, Mount Eden doesn't work, but our investment on our present heavy rail platforms embraced and re-geared. And I'll ensure a whole bunch of things, like a proper conversation about another crossing to the shore that won't be put back till 2030 under the present leadership. We need, all Aucklanders need, and all businessmen need certainty upon which to pack out and around their investment decisions. And the role of local government and government is to provide that solidity and certainty, and I've provided that in spades in my policy. Listen, I've got to go and I've got a meeting with a youth group in the West shortly.
Fair enough. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Obviously, I'm just going to briefly run down. There are five main pledges that you've made on your website. Those are to open the books and clean the house, return democracy to neighborhoods, bring public assets back under democratic control, crack down on waste and incompetence, and proper partnership with central government. These have partially been discussed in what I've said. Hopefully they can be discussed at a later point as well.
Sure.
If you want to find out more as listeners, you can find that out on the website, which is jtformayor.co.nz, or stay tuned to 95BFM for hopefully a discussion of these ideas with some other candidates here and there as well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.